Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. 12 after the hour, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling in Washington, D.C., broadcasting here in our nation's capital, one of my favorite places in the whole world. And I know that, you know, some of you think it's a wacky place, and you would be right about that. Certain quarters of it, there's this place, there's this big building on the hill over there in downtown Washington. They get a little wacky over there sometimes, but basically it's a great city, and it's just a beautiful place, especially in the springtime. Washington in the springtime is really, really nice, and of course, as some of you know, I spend most of my time, whenever I can, I spend in Georgetown. I stay in Georgetown, and it's just, I encourage you, if you really want to appreciate Washington, you know, make sure you get out to the neighborhoods, and not just downtown, not just in the museums, but get out into the neighborhoods, and DuPont Circle, and places like that, and Georgetown, and Old Town, Alexandria, and all those kinds of places. Those are beautiful places, wonderful places to walk around. And someone who knows all about that, because she lives near one of those places I just mentioned, is our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim. I think the D.C. Tourist Bureau should hire you.
I'm going to send them a bill for all this.
I think you should.
Well, you know, Joan, it's a big city. Pretty much. I mean, it's not huge. It's not like Los Angeles, obviously, or whatever, or Chicago or Atlanta. But it's pretty big in terms of the town. But what I like about it is they've got this rule that no building can be over a certain height. How many was it? 6 stories?
I forget how many stories, but that's so that I believe it's the Washington Monument would not be obscured. Yeah,
you've got to be able. You cannot cover up the Washington Monument. I think it's a great idea. And so when you know, it's one of the most interesting cities to fly into. Because of the all the buildings, there's a lid on all the buildings, you know, and then you've got the Washington Monument sticking up there like an antenna, and it's just beautiful.
Yes, yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, Joan. By the way, this is National Eat What You Want Day.
Boy, it's a great day.
How is that different from any other day for me? That's one of my questions.
Well, yeah, I don't understand that, but I wish I could cut our interview short so I could go and have a big breakfast.
By the way, this is also National School Nurse Day.
Wow.
So thank you to all of you school nurses.
Right.
I personally didn't know any school nurses. I was in school before there actually were nurses, and so I didn't have a school nurse. But anyway, Joan, I'm a little troubled by your lead here. One of the silver linings to high energy costs is that it will aid in the war on global warming.
Right.
I didn't know we had a war on global warming. Did I sleep through a headline or something?
Well, I guess if we don't have it, we need it.
Well, all right, explain yourself, young lady.
Well, we say here evidence is mounting that the danger is real. Now, I'm guessing you take issue with that.
Okay, keep going.
No, but I'm asking, do you take issue with that?
I take issue with some of what's here, and I do. Uh-huh.
Okay, well, let's see. This should be fun then. We are saying that there could be some serious long-term consequences, including flooding, population dislocations, and the like. And we're saying that if you want to reduce greenhouse gases, which are the cause of global warming, we would need to reduce emissions of coal, natural gas, and oil.
Yeah. Well, you know, Joan, here's my take on this. I don't disagree, and I've said before that I believe that it is very possible, very likely, that human behavior, modern human behavior on planet Earth, is contributing to changes in the climate.
Okay.
But I do think it's important that we don't get excited, that we take a deep breath, and that we realize that the Earth has been warming for thousands of years.
Okay.
10,000 years ago, there was a 2,000-foot sheet of ice on Kentucky, and there were two different species of elephants living there.
Okay.
And so in the last 10, 12, 15,000 years, you know, that ice cap has receded, and that was long before any kind of an internal combustion engine was going on. So we have to realize that some of these things are nature's way. The other thing that I'm concerned about, Joan, is if industrialized nations have an obligation in terms of emissions and all that, but we've got a lot of there are a lot of third world countries, China and India, that are producing a lot of carbon emissions. That we can cut our emissions back. We're competing with those guys. If they don't, we've still got a problem, and we've become less competitive. And that's where I have a problem, Joan.
Okay. Well, let's just for the sake of argument here, let's say China was willing to cut whatever emissions we felt were necessary for them to cut, and any other nations. Let's say all nations were in agreement.
Right.
Do you think that that should be done?
I think that would be a worthy goal to work toward. Just so you know that I'm a reasonable person in this, and that I do believe, although I'm not often unreasonable, but I do believe that humans do have the ability to impact the weather situation and the climactic situation. I believe that, but that was a problem I had with Kyoto, was because China and India were going to be able to rock on just like they're doing. They weren't going to be impacted one iota. And the United States was going to have to go back to 1990 standards.
Right, but that's two separate issues. I understand completely what you're saying about
right.
the competitive issue. But the other issue that we've also been struggling with over the last several years is whether there is a global warming problem caused by human
right.
behavior. And I think the Bush administration has for a long time said the answer is no.
Well, I've had scientists on this show on both sides of the issue. We've covered both sides. I've had people on who said that it does, people who said that it doesn't. I believe that we're in a global warming trend that has nothing to do with human beings. I believe that human beings can accelerate that trend and contribute to it and make it maybe move a little bit faster? I do think that's possible. But I also think that we don't need to throw the baby out with the dishwater, that as we come up with ways to improve our emissions, as we have that opportunity, I think we ought to do that. But I do think it ought to be globally, like you said. Now that's the trick, Joan. That's the hat trick.
That's a big trick. Yeah,
it's a big one because we right now we just like to get China not to quit stealing our intellectual property.
itself would be a big trick.
That's part of the hat trick. That's one of
right.
the three things on the hat trick there.
That's right.
But the point you guys are making is that higher fuel costs are going to put more sunlight on other more, say, greener technologies, right?
That's right.
That's one of the main things you're saying, and I agree. And I agree with that fact. I mean, there's no denying that. So in that way, Joan, I guess you guys are right.
Good wow.
20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. She's stunned, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., talking to our good friend Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Joan, do you know what your carbon footprint is?
Do I know what my carbon footprint is?
Yeah, haven't you seen those commercials?
No.
Well, there's a commercial on, and I haven't gotten into it, but it's apparently... They're trying to get people to realize how much carbon their lifestyle is putting into the atmosphere. How much? If you drive a big car, if you a gas guzzler, so to speak, if you burn the wrong kind of energy, if you smoke, I guess I don't know I don't know what the different criteria are that go into determining what your carbon footprint is, but it's. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I'm not a tree hugger, but although I love trees, but I do think that's probably not a bad thing for all of us to become a little more aware. But what I want America to do and other countries that would be affected that have a carbon conscience, so to speak, and I think we do, is to be aware of what we're doing to the environment. But then come up with, as we can do very well, come up with efficient ways to find new technologies that will replace those 19th and 20th century technologies, those
right.
technologies,
mm-hmm.
with efficiency and with and still allow us to be competitive. What do you think?
Well, gosh, it makes sense to me.
So you agree with me? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of afraid to go that far out on a limb.
Well, the this carbon footprint thing, I'm going to look into that, Joan. We need to find out what our carbon footprint is.
I may be afraid to find that out. You know me and my private jets and everything.
That's exactly right.
Right.
But it is probably, but any of this that we're going to do, Joan, as you guys point out, it's not going to be without pain, is it? If we go slow and take our time and come up with replacement technologies, stuff is going to cost us more if we want cleaner air, right?
Well, and we say the fixes will hurt everyone, so the pain will be pretty well spread out.
Electricity?
Right. Well, we're saying utilities, refineries will be hit. Manufacturers, that's a pretty broad category. Manufacturers
like drag,
of medical.
If you like drag racing around town in your car, the new cars may not have as much off the line as the
old
cars.
Oh, no.
And I know what a hot rodder you are,
yeah.
Joe.
Right.
So, but I do think that, and back to your original point, which I think is a good one, and that is that as fuel prices, as energy prices rise, which they are,
right,
it's going to bring into play the need to find alternative energy.
Well, and that's not such a bad thing from another standpoint too. You and I have talked about, you know, what are the true reserves of oil in the world, and we're not really sure. There are some folks who are scared that we may have reached sort of beyond the halfway point in what those reserves are. I'm not sure if that's necessarily true, but we sure are gobbling up oil at an incredible rate,
yep.
And we sure would like it to be around for the next few generations.
Well, at least until we get some replacement technologies, no question
right.
about it. And, you know, Joan, that's another two-sided story there. And we've had people on this show who said we're running out of oil.
Right.
We've had people on the show who said that nobody alive today will ever be, you know, that our grandchildren will have plenty of oil and our great-grandchildren. And that so you can get both sides of the issue. But I do think that we have the ability, earthlings have the ability, if we want to make some changes, we have the ability, and I think in this century, we will have the ability to propel ourselves wherever we want to go without polluting the environment. It'll happen this century. It may not happen in the first half of the century.
Well, that makes sense, sure.
You know, another quick thing, Joan, you guys have pointed this out in the letter in the past,
mm-hmm.
is two things. The first thing is something I've learned from our economist, and that is that the reason why the higher energy is not affecting our economy any worse than it is because we use less oil per dollar of GDP than we used to. So higher oil prices have less of an impact on us. But the other thing, this is what you guys have pointed out, is that without even having said all of that, we still have a much higher dependence in America upon foreign oil for the increased. We do consume more oil than we used to.
Right.
It's just that our economy is much bigger, but that because we consume more, we haven't produced that much more in the United States, so we depend on foreign oil more, and that's dangerous. That's a dangerous and in a lot of ways that's a dangerous scenario, isn't it?
Oh, no question. That's always been a concern of mine, and you know that was a big problem back in the oil crisis in the late 70s.
Right. Absolutely, Joan. I do think that it would be good for all of us to be aware of two things. Number one, what are we each doing to contribute to whatever pollution that there is out there? That's one thing. But number two, take all of that into consideration with what any adjustments, any things that we do differently will do to our competitiveness in the United States, for example,
mm-hmm.
around the world. We have to balance that, don't we?
Right.
Can't throw the baby out with the dishwater. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about taxes. We have news, ladies and gentlemen. We have some things that have happened just over the last 24 hours that we're going to report on right here on this show on what's happening in Congress with regard to the tax you're going to pay in the future. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blasting. Stay with us.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My website, folks, is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there, and it comes every Sunday in the afternoon, gets you ready for the week ahead. You'll find a couple of articles, typically a kind of a meaty article on small business, and then there'll be a little more of a motivational one after that, and then the schedule, all of the great folks who are going to be on the show in the week ahead. And so thank you to the thousands, count them thousands, of people who have been subscribing. Many of you for now in your seventh year as a subscriber, we appreciate that. And don't forget, folks, all that's free, like everything on our website except for the books. And don't forget to check out our blog. It's really being used to a great degree, and I'm very happy to see all of you using the blog. Joan Pride, as I said, is our guest, and we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Joan, we have tax news. Talk to us.
Boy, I can hardly believe it myself.
It's good.
Congress is very close to completing work on legislation that would continue some very important tax breaks, and particularly the 15% top rate on capital gains and dividends. And I believe also the provision known as Section 179,
yep,
expensing for small businesses.
Yes.
And also legislation that will keep people in middle income levels from having to pay the alternative minimum tax,
which is something you've been wringing your hands over for a long time now.
You bet.
I mean, you've talked about this a lot.
Now, the House and Senate conferees reached an agreement. The House has passed the bill, and the Senate is supposed to pass it pretty soon. And I would think they do have the votes, because I don't want to get into all the arcane ins and outs of parliamentary procedure, but they just need an up or down majority vote. They don't have to do that 60-vote thing that sometimes the Senate has to do.
To avoid the filibuster.
Right, exactly. This is a filibuster-proof bill.
You mean the opponents can't filibuster this?
Correct. This is a bill that is passed under what they call reconciliation. Now, those are special budget instructions that everybody agrees to, and one of the things they agree to is no filibustering.
Where's the fun in that, Joan?
I know.
I'm being silly, folks, because, as you know, this is very good news. Joan,
yes.
Since the 15% tax was lowered to 15% on dividends and capital gains, and since Section 179 was increased, the accelerated depreciation was increased to, I've forgotten, what is it, $105,000 a year right now or something like that? Since that's been increased to allow small business owners to accelerate depreciation.
Actually, isn't it $108,000?
It may be this year.
Yeah.
I've forgotten. It's just so darn good.
Well, I'm looking at it in the letter.
Once it went over $100,000, I forgot it. I couldn't keep it up with all that. But the thing is, Joan, I mean, I've even read detractors of President Bush, economists who were not his best friends, admit that these tax cuts have been a major reason why the economy has been recovered as it has, and why the Congress has more money to spend than they know what to do with, almost.
Well,
the emphasis on almost.
Well, that's true. Now, I hate to rain on your parade a little bit, but just so that your listeners don't get the wrong idea, none of these tax provisions we just talked about have been made permanent. They've only been extended through 2010. They were supposed to expire in 2008.
And so
the chickens are really going to come home to roost in 2010. That's going to be a tough year, because that's going to be a very expensive bill to try to get these provisions extended again.
Right. And, of course, another thing that's going to be coming up later on, Joan, because I don't think that's part of this bill, is the effort to abolish the death tax.
Right. That's gone back and forth as to whether that's going to be coming up again. As you know, I think the votes have been there for quite a while in the House, but the Senate can't seem now. And that's a situation where you do need 60 votes, and they've been darn close in the Senate, but haven't quite gotten there.
Well, and that one already was to phase out and to go away in 2010, and then to come back 100% in 2011, which is, I still I still am amazed that they can pass a law like that with a straight face.
That's the most bizarre piece of legislation that I've ever seen, and
how
you can imagine I've seen some bizarre legislation.
How can they not be embarrassed by that? Joan, another thing that's not you guys don't cover this week, but is going on this week that I'd like to remind people about, Senate Bill S-1955 is the one that's being considered, even as we speak probably, to allow small business owners to buy what's called small business health plans. And so you still have time to call your senators and encourage them to please vote yes on Senate Bill 1955. It's a big thing, folks. I think the impact is going to be incredible, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. 20 till, I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. As you know, I'm broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., up here working with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and I'll be spending some time with the Women Impacts and Public Policy folks later today, and also the Chamber and the Chamber tomorrow, of course, when I moderate the panel for their Access 2006. Joan, you're going to be there, aren't you?
Absolutely.
You're pretty excited about seeing me tomorrow, aren't you?
Well, yeah, whatever.
Hey, Joan, I want to tell the audience about your website. Folks, I like doing this because it's a very important website, kiplinger.com. You can find out about their publications there as well. And as you know, I've been a subscriber to the Kiplinger Letter long before I was doing the interviews with Kiplinger. I was a subscriber of theirs and have been reading their publications for decades now. The Kiplinger Letter, which is the one that Joan and I work off of, is the weekly publication, the flagship. And then they've got three biweekly letters, the California, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter. And they've got this outstanding magazine that you can find on newsstands. Joan, what's the name of that one?
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
You can also subscribe to it. They'll send it right to your door.
Yep.
And give us that phone number, Joan.
Sure. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
But don't worry about subscribing just to go to the website. A lot of good stuff there for free, and I encourage you to check it out. And as you get into it more and more, I think you'll say, wait a minute, I want more of this, and then I think you'll subscribe. And they'll give you a 30-day free trial, too. Joan, let's move down and talk about the economy. You guys say that employers are going to see a cooling off ahead. What are you in the economy? What are you thinking about?
Well, we looked at the hiring data for April, and we said that fewer jobs were gained in April from March. So we're seeing some moderation, and we also see some moderation in consumer spending because we're figuring that at some point higher interest rates and higher gas prices are going to take their toll.
But, Joan, if you and I are going down a racetrack at 200 miles an hour, then I let off on the gas. And we slow down to 140, you're going to say, wow, that was a big drop
there.
That's
not such a bad thing.
But we're still, you know, our hair is still blowing straight out behind us
right.
in the wind. And so, you know, don't we have to use the word, it's all relative, the term it's all relative in terms of the April hiring?
Well, yeah. I mean, the net gain of 138,000 jobs doesn't sound too bad to me.
That's a month I'll take any day of the week, won't you?
Right, exactly.
but there are... There are some things, and there's no question about it. By the way, I did my FedWatch show yesterday, but I was traveling a lot and everything. I haven't heard the news. Did the Fed raise rates yesterday?
They certainly did.
A quarter point?
Yes. Now let me grab my...
Just as we predicted.
Quarter point for the 16th consecutive time. Now, there's hints that they're going to pause, but the pause, they're also kind of hinting that pause would not be a halt. In other words, they could stop and get started again.
And, Joan, if you remember, Kiplinger and Blassingame predicted I did it in December, I think you guys did it a little after me, that they would go to 5 points on the 5% on the Fed funds rate and stop. I predicted that they would stop at that. And I'm not surprised if they got to 5 by May. It'll be interesting to see how they go. But I will tell you, Joan, that 8% prime rate, which means most small business owners living in the world of prime plus borrow money at 9, 10, maybe even more. That's that's a good way. With us being so heavily dependent upon bank debt to grow our business, that is a good way to slow our operations down a little bit.
Well, I can imagine. So, but is cost of capital as important as availability of capital, or do the two go hand in hand?
Well, no. Obviously, availability is first, because if you can't get it, you know, if it's tight, you know, there it is possible to justify higher interest rates. You might have to pay more for it, but you got to have the capital. But
right.
The thing about it, though, Joan, is right now there's plenty of capital out there. It's just getting more expensive.
Exactly.
That's the key. But at the same time, what's happening, though, Joan, is what you may see is a drop-off of hiring, but an increase in capital expenditures. As more people say, you know what, I don't think I want to grow my business with people for the next 12 months. Maybe I'll buy a new piece of technology and grow my business that way.
Oh.
Because the bank won't loan me money to finance an employee for 60 months, but they'll loan me 60 bucks, 60 month a loan to buy a new server or something like that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So we're crafty little devils. We'll find a way to get around all this.
Right.
Joan, let's move over and talk about politics.
Oh, good.
We have a Senate majority leader named Bill Frist.
Yes.
Out of Tennessee.
Yes, that's right.
And I think Bill would like to be king. I mean president.
You think he would? Why do you say that?
What are his chances?
He's got two chances, slim and none.
And why is that?
Well, we're saying he just has not, you know, the post of Senate Majority Leader was sort of his opportunity to shine. And our analysis is that really hasn't happened. I mean, he has had some achievements, but we're saying that his missteps have really overwhelmed those accomplishments.
Bill Frist, and I don't mean to be uncharitable, and because I like Bill Frist, but he reminds me, in terms of political acumen, in terms of political gravitas, he reminds me of John Edwards. You know what I mean? More hat than cattle, as the Texas say. He's all hat and no cattle. I don't mean that exactly, because they're both smart guys. They're both capable. They just don't have the gravitas in terms of politics to even think about becoming president yet. And I think that's what you guys are saying, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Plus, he stuck his foot in his mouth a couple of times.
Yep.
Of course, that shouldn't... I mean, when has that ever disqualified anybody?
That's right.
From being president, let alone running for president.
Right.
Quick break, 10-10. We're going to be right back with Joan Pryde. Stay with us. Just remember my life. We're back at 7-0. I'm Jim Blastingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's move down and talk about something that's probably not in the mainstream yet, but it's heading there. And that's, we're talking about some technology issues, folks. And Joan, you guys say that hackers are targeting cell phones with text messages, those that are capable of text messages.
Right. Boy, you know, you think you're safe, you'd be safe with your cell phone, but you're not safe anywhere. We're saying be careful and don't get tricked into opening an infected file or attachment in your cell phone. You have to treat it pretty much, use the same rules that you would use when you're opening a file or opening an email on your computer, because you could get stuck with a virus that could kill your cell phone battery, we're saying.
Wow. And what I'd like to know is, maybe you don't have this information, but I'd like to know if it has the same ability to go in and steal, you know, contact information like it can do, and, you know, can do from your own computer.
Well, look at it this way. If it can't now, they're probably going to come up with the ability to do that in the future.
I've been doing quite a bit of work on the security issue, the whole internet online security issue with IBM. In the next 2 weeks, I'm going to do three more security conferences, help them deliver three more of those. And I've really learned an awful lot about Joan, about this whole environment. And what I found out is, folks, that it's a multi-billion-dollar business, that the hackers that Joan and Kiplinger describes in their letter this week, these are not just teenage boys that don't have enough to do, that are out there just trying to, you know, have a little fun and create some mayhem. These are people who are serious. They've made significant investments. They're serious about finding out what you have of value that they can use for illicit purposes. Maybe it's to collect your information. Maybe it's to of other people that you have, your customer lists, whatever it might be. Maybe it's to get your personal identification information so they can use your credit or whatever to steal your identity. It may be to disrupt your business or whatever. But Joan, what I know is it is an international multi-billion-dollar effort. These criminals.
I believe it.
And folks, the good news is there are organizations. And Joan, you point this out. Talk to us about some of the software that's available. A good
well,
who can help you with this?
Yeah, thank goodness. Antivirus software is coming. I guess it's not here yet, but it's coming. Symantec, F-Secure. Symantec. See, this is how much I know about this. And we also say that some Nokia cell phones have protection built right into them.
Right.
I may have to get a new cell phone. You know, my cell phone is 5 years old.
Joan, I don't think I would have told that.
It's such a dinosaur that hackers can't get into it, nor would they want to.
Joan, another thing, as my audience knows, I travel around a fair amount. I take my laptop with me. I connect up to hotel. I'm connected. As I stay here at the Georgetown Inn, I'm connected to their wireless system. And every time I hook up to a hotel system, I get bombarded with hits from people trying to get in, much more so than I do when I'm back in my home.
Oh no!
Yeah, it's serious, folks. Do not travel anywhere and hook up to a system, hardwired or wireless, unless you know that your security system is working 100%. Because they are all over anything where a bunch of business people get together. I see lots and lots of stuff that my system zaps a lot more on a daily basis when I'm traveling than I do when I'm at home.
Wow.
So, folks, check it out. It's just, Joan, Apple computers have thought that they were vulnerable and have been for a long time. But they're going to start using Microsoft technology in the future, aren't they?
They are. And I think for a long time they were not vulnerable, I guess because they were not compatible with Microsoft technology.
Right.
But now we're saying they are becoming, as we put it, a juicy target of hackers. So you have to watch that as well.
Joan, we're running out of time. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about the currency issues, how the dollar is going. You being our currency expert, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to hear your wisdom on that, Joan.
Gee, and I'm really upset about that.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you later in the week. You and I will be together tomorrow
with
the U.S. Chamber.
Have a good conference.
Thank you. I'll see you then. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.